Hi, hello, how are you? It's Daryl here, and I am the host of Cage Rage, a Nicolas Cage podcast. On this podcast, come and join me on my journey to true cage nirvana. What is that, you ask? Well, it's the most profound, spiritual, emotional, elite state of being achieved only by, you guessed it, watching every movie the greatest actor of any generation has ever been in. Each week I'll be joined by an amazing guest as we talk all about the man I call the Golden Hog of Hollywood and dive unnecessarily deep into a Nick Cage film to learn a little more about this renegade of cinema. If you like your movie podcast a little different and a lot silly, or you just love Nicolas Cage, come and join me over on Cage Rage wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, keep on caging, it's all you have to do.
See the sorcerer of the black arts, the gold helmet faceless vizier, the death fight of the centaur on the griffin, the six-armed goddess of evil.
Welcome to the last episode of the podcast That Wouldn't Die. I'm your host, Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
How do?
And this week, we have a very special guest, Antonio from the Cultworthy Podcast. Whoop,
whoop. Hello, it's about time I made it onto your guys' show, since you've graced your presence on my show, I think, what, three times?
I think that's
possibly.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
We're happy to have you. As our listeners know, we don't have guests that often, so this is a special treat for all of us. Let the good times roll. Yes.
It's like early Christmas.
It's a Christmas miracle.
It's a Christmas miracle.
This if you week, celebrate the holiday.
Exactly. This week, we're discussing the fantasy classic, The Golden Voyage. It's hard to describe it. The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, starring John Philip Law, Caroline Munro, Tom Baker, and an entire cast of non-Arabs, even though it takes place entirely in the Arab world. So,
and
good
when
time.
I was a kid, I thought it was in India. I was like, is everyone in? I thought everybody was Indian.
Well, because he's wearing a turban.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is so that the giveaway?
Kinda, exactly. But you will never see more blue-eyed Arabs in the world than you will see in this movie.
It's possible.
It is possible. Each week on the podcast That Wouldn't Die, we discuss guilty pleasures and forgotten classics of the horror and sci-fi and sometimes fantasy genres with a comedic twist, we hope. So good time.
We hope.
I'm calling this horror because it has a monster. Or, I mean, religious studies. We have various religions all trying to kill Mr. Law.
Aren't they the same, though? Like, if you think about religious studies and horrors and monsters, I kind of think they all belong in, like, the same envelope.
Absolutely.
Boom.
And at some point, we're just kind of doing whatever movie we feel like doing. So deal with it.
Yeah.
that's how we roll. We're free.
Wings of Desire next week.
No, that we will not be doing. Good time. So what are you guys up to? What's the latest?
I don't know. What about you?
I just saw the goddamn Nun 2 yesterday, and it was so freaking boring. It was so boring. I did enjoy eating popcorn, though.
Did you see the Nun 1?
No. I only went to see this because somebody asked if I wanted to go, and I wanted to go to the movies. Otherwise, I enjoy The Conjuring, although the last Conjuring was crap. I didn't watch any of the Annabelles, so I was like, okay, what the heck? What the heck? I'll go check this out. But it was boring. First cardinal sin. It was slow. But
I think
it's
hilarious that they like start building these multi-universes out of simple concepts. Like, you have one successful horror movie, now you have to spin it off to like 10, and it's only been 10 years, if that, since the first one came out. So yeah, it's interesting.
And Catholicism is on the upswing, so after this movie, I'm pretty sure all the saints will now get their own movies, because this was about one saint who has superhero powers.
Well, that's
so cool. It's the Catholic Marvel Universe. Catholicism saves the day again.
Holy
so
shit.
Exorcist.
Yeah, but, Exorcist. Okay, guys, I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah. you know, I'm in the Mormon capital of the world. Why haven't the Mormons gotten a decent horror movie yet? I mean, we get TV movies and stuff about like abuse in the church, but where is our evil, what, saint or evil idol or evil, I don't know, church pew? We need something.
It's simply the evil is simply the people who have left the church, I think. I'll have to check. I do have the BYU channel on my infinite cable right next to the Scientology channel.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, they really need more of that. I mean, you're right, though. Catholicism gets most of the movies, and then they try to push a little Scientology superhero business. Nobody gave a damn about that.
What,
so,
Battlefield
yeah.
Earth? Is that what you're talking
Battlefield
about?
Battlefield Earth. So now you're right. It's Mormon time.
It is. It's definitely Mormon time. I'll make it happen. I'll start
Mighty
spreading
Mormon
the word.
Time.
Mighty Mormon Power Rangers.
Sweet Lord.
Okay. Yeah, by day they're missionaries that are knocking on your door with their bicycles and their black bags. And they're solving crime and kicking ass.
And then they put all of their magic rings together and form like the super Mormazord, right?
I hope they're purity rings that they're putting together.
The purity rings. The ultimate virgin.
Like Voltron. They all just
Voltron.
Yes. Good Lord. If there's any Mormon listeners, no offense, of course.
Just a little bit. Just
I saw you wink. Why did you say, why did you wink when you said, of course?
Exactly. Aaron! Give us your 30-second synopsis of The Golden Voyage.
I forgot to tell you, I'm continuing my one concert a month. So I saw Sigur Rós over at the Greek in L.A.
Now, who's that?
Icelandic atmospheric music. You never saw so many white people at a concert. Everybody
out of Iceland.
They just came from yoga. It was. I saw the same fish shirt go by at least four times, all different people. It was like, yeah, a lot of linen, a lot of man buns. But it was awesome. Don't get me wrong. It had a full orchestra.
I always say, if you like good Icelandic chanting, you should see the new version of the Justice League on HBO Max, because Zack Snyder really leans into the Icelandic chanting.
Since I've been to that concert, like I was watching Vanilla Sky, and I was like, oh, that's Sigur Rós. So if you know a couple of their songs, suddenly it's just repeated over and all. Whenever they want something spooky and atmospheric, it's them.
Wherever you go. Wherever you go.
Wherever you go. You can't help. You don't know you're listening to it, but it's there.
Good times.
Yeah.
Give us your 30-second synopsis, please.
All you need to know. Ray Harryhausen. People are traveling on a quest. Some dude lost his face. Doctor Who has golden coins, and it's a race to keep him from getting all the power. Cool monsters, good always wins out over evil. See, God bless.
Yeah, that sums it up.
Good times had by all.
I was thinking, I have never seen Jason and the Argonauts.
Never.
Oh wow,
never. Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, let me just kind of fill you in on this. So please. I was raised on Harryhausen movies. Like my dad used to just dub them off of whatever TBS, TNT they were playing on. So I had probably multiple VHS tapes with partial Seventh Voyage of Sinbad on one tape and then part two on another, you know. And it's funny because when Kevin and I were talking about what are we going to do for this episode, I was like, well, how about like Harryhausen movies or Sinbad movies? And this is my thing, is like Jason the Argonauts to me is like the all-time classic, like unbeatable. Seventh Voyage is just Sinbad, tons of fun. If you thought there were white people in this movie, oh my God. there's like a little white genie in that one who's like straight off of Leave It to Beaver, but that's a different story. Then Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger. That was like my favorite of the Sinbads because it's kind of horny. It's got... Jane Seymour's butt, you know, running around naked. It's got a horny troglodyte. Like, that's a cool one, right? This was the one that always just kind of never made it into my rotation. And I never really thought about why.
Interesting.
Like, I had it on tape, but I would always pick one of the other ones. So when we were talking about Sinbad movies, I'm like, well, let's do Golden because it'll give me a chance to rewatch it and reassess it. And yeah, I was excited to review it. But now I'm like wondering what the consensus is among the group, because it definitely isn't as good as any of the others or Jason. But it's its own thing.
I have to say, it's been 1,000 years since I saw the seventh Voyage of Sinbad. And I know I've seen them all, but it's been so long that I don't really remember them. I always remember them because the statue of Kali used to freak me out as a kid.
Yeah, it's pretty
Absolutely. Cool. Well, it's funny. When you suggested Sinbad movies, I thought you meant the comedian.
That was like, shut your mouth.
Necessary like, Roughness.
Are we going to watch House Guest?
Jingle All the Way. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. No, I... this movie, this is one of those things where as a kid, I distinctly remember this. Like it was on like Channel 5 or whatever on a Saturday afternoon. I absolutely remember seeing it. I don't think I actually saw it all the way through till later, like in adulthood. And then I started to go back. I saw, within the last 5 years, I saw Jason and the Argonauts for the first time. Because that's an earlier movie. My jam was going Harryhausen was Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans. Yeah,
Clash, right. Which again, it's funny. The Harryhausen technology was from like, it was the same from like 45 through 85. Yeah. There weren't leaps and bounds in the stop motion technology. So, but I dug it all. No question.
Absolutely. Yeah, Clash of the Titans, I loved it when it came out. I didn't see the new one because that seemed like blasphemy. But I really like these older ones. Clash of the Titans had a little bit, the Medusa, but I really love the Centaur fighting the Griffin. I love Kali. There's just more of it here.
Right. Well, if you tune into a Harryhausen movie, I want creatures. Why else am I here? Give me
That's
creatures. Mm-hmm. Unmotivated creatures. Griffin shows up out of nowhere. I'm in for it.
I'm in for it. I don't need backstories. I don't need character development. You're just there to watch the craft.
Absolutely. I think that's why this one is one of the weaker ones, just in my opinion, because it has less creatures than the others. You know, the others start off with creatures right off the bat, and they just keep throwing them at you. And this one, I mean, for the first, 45 minutes, the only creature you get is his little homunculus bird monkey guy, you know?
I wanted one of those so bad when I was a kid. And then I had to Google homunculus. I was like, what? But very cool.
I saw Eye of the Tiger for the first time maybe 10 years ago, and I know...
The thrill of the fight?
It's the Eye of the Tiger. Sinbad is always played by a different actor.
Right.
Eye of the Tiger, it was played by Patrick Wayne, John Wayne's
son. Yeah, John Wayne's kid. Yeah. Good-looking guy.
I didn't know that.
Yes, isn't that funny? I have a soft spot for this one because this, again, was the one. I remember seeing the Centaur Cyclops thing.
Yes.
In my dreams, frankly.
Ooh.
It's coming out of the closet.
And it had kind of these 70s staples for me. It had, like I said, John Philip Law from Barbarella is Sinbad. Yeah. Caroline Monroe, who was in Dracula, 1972 AD. She was in
Star Crash.
Spy Who Loved Me. Star Crash with Marjo Gortner, of course.
Marjo Gortner.
I don't know how she kept those hip huggers on.
Dude,
this
Marjo
could have gone
Gortner,
to an NC-17.
Christopher Lee, David Hasselhoff, like Star Crash.
we got to add to the list. No, she was, and I believe she was in the Adam Ant Goody Two Shoes video from the early 80s.
Shut your mouth.
Yeah,
she
was.
All over the place.
And one of my favorite slashers of the 80s, Slaughter High, where at the age of 38, she played a high school student.
Love her. Love her. She's dynamite. I especially like how the fact that this is takes place entirely in the Muslim world in like the 1300s or whatever, and yet her boobs are constantly just in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Just
she's always oiled, sweaty, and about ready to fall out of everything.
Not that I've complaining. It was just interesting. And then, of course, the chameleon, that is Tom Baker playing the evil wizard Korra.
Right.
I didn't make the connection until like a couple of years ago. I'm like, is that Doctor Who
in
here?
Doctor Who, yeah.
I did not recognize him. I heard the name. I was like, that name is so familiar. Never put the connection. I was like, what? He was terrifying.
He's
great. Was excellent. Yeah. I do like the villain, the female villain in Eye of the Tiger, because she has kind of like the Monica Dispel from DuckTales kind of vibe to her. She's very witchy. But on second viewing of this one, I really dug his performance as Korra. And here's the other thing too, guys. Like, this is going to sound off. Just let me finish it, right? I think one of the reasons as a kid, and I'm talking like 8 years old, the reason why this might not have been my favorite is because I think it did kind of push a little too much in, I'm in quotes here, the authenticity of the races that are in the movie.
I totally disagree. It was a sensitive portrayal.
In Seventh Voyage, everyone, like I said, is total white bread. No one's even pretending to be Arab. No one's pretending to be anything but American.
They had like 50s haircuts.
They got the nice little bouffant. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And then in Seventh Voyage, there's so much going on and there's a lot of caricature performances that aren't very racially specific, but they're very American.
Yes.
I think the reason why I was kind of thrown off by John Philip Law as a kid, as Sinbad, is that he used an accent. And it wasn't that I was offended by it. It was just my ears did not know how to register an accent with Sinbad because I was so used to the other two movies.
Right.
And then when you see all the other portrayals in this, especially one of my favorites, I call him the not Eric Estrada character, the little lazy dude whose dad sells him to Sinbad. He's like, please take my concubine and 400 pieces of gold and my lazy son. Yeah. Just get these people out of my house.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most of the actors were obvious of kind of a Nordic flavor, if you will. And I think you had two Italians and one Puerto Rican, and they just called it even. They're like, okay, good enough. So,
well, I didn't recognize John Philip Law as who he was, because normally I'm familiar with him with blonde hair. Like, Pygar, he's blonde. The Russians are coming. He's blonde. So all these years, I never put the connection together.
Also, Danger Diabolique, he wears a mask almost the whole time. But anyway. And the dude is, I looked it up. The dude is like 6'4". Like, he was a tall guy. But I didn't really notice how tall he was in this film. And I don't know if it's a turban or something that threw it off, but then I started seeing him try to do like athletic things, like jump on the rope or jump off of the deck of the ship while he's fighting. And he's kind of clumsy. And I was like, oh, he's got the tall man clumsy. That makes a lot more sense now.
Yes.
Where like other Sinbads were a lot more spry and athletic. This guy is a little bit faulty.
Right.
You can tip him over. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like and the funny thing too, is when he's fighting the siren mast, when he brings it to life, Korra brings it to life on the ship, he's almost as tall as a thing. And I was like, interesting.
This is an issue in some Harryhausen movies where the scale sometimes adjusts. You know what I mean? Where they're fighting, he's fighting the centaur creature who easily picks up little Caroline Monroe earlier in the movie. And now he jumps on its back and it's like the same size as it.
Right.
So now he's tall. I don't know if he's quite that tall, but yeah. Good time.
We're just confused because normally Hollywood is not 6'4". You have to level people out. So Tom Cruise somehow at 5'6" is like a giant compared to everyone else. It's just Tom Cruise, Billy Barty, the guy from Willow.
We talked about that. How in the movie Legend, Tom Cruise was the star of Legend, and they were going to have like a little kind of, mythical dwarf-like creature with him. And it was going to be played by Mickey Rooney, but Mickey Rooney was just a little too tall. Just a little too tall. So they had to bring in Billy Barty. So there you go.
Poor Mickey. Could have been his finest role. Fired by Tom Cruise for being
too tall. He needed the work,
tall.
For God's sakes, too. I mean, this is the 80s. This is 80s Mickey Rooney. Okay.
He's never been fired for being too tall before, so he could write that in his journal.
Why don't we jump right into the highlights? What do we got? Aaron, got anything?
The first highlight, all I want to say is that chick looks like she's a member of the Manson family. with their crappy drawn in with, I don't know, pastel marker or something on her hand. I was born with this eye. Oh,
no,
that was the shittiest special effect of the whole movie.
The crazy eye tattoo never, there's never a revelation at the end. Oh my God, here's where that came from. It was just a bizarre coincidence that when they got to Lemuria, she had the tattoo, which didn't help her. Instead, it made her the sacrifice for the monster.
Well, yeah. So that's the weird thing is on this viewing, I got the impression that she is from there, that she is like part of that weird tribe that maybe somehow was taken away as a child, but she is meant to be sacrificed. That was like her whole point.
Right.
So I feel there's some like backstory that we didn't get, you know, but
it was never written.
I'm not begging for a director's cut or anything. I'm just saying we missed
Snyder to get involved is what
second
I
audio commentary.
Exactly. Well, because then the sensitive portrayal of the native people of Lemuria, are they green? They're green, or is that?
They're green. Yeah.
I mean, are they born green? Are they just a different new race of people? Or
I assume they painted themselves. Like you have some of those tribes for ceremonial reasons in Africa that paint themselves different. I assume that. Now,
like they got back from Burning Man, you know? They hadn't washed off the playa yet.
It could have been like they're descendants of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
I like your connection better.
There is a lot of this movie where Sinbad's like, I guess we're just going on this adventure. Where there's not a lot of motivation behind it. Like they get to the castle and the Grand Vizier in the gold mask just kind of explains his problem. And Sinbad's like, okay, I guess we're going.
His face get melted? Was that explained?
It was explained. The king died without an heir. And then the Grand Vizier is like kind of, I don't know, he's the steward or whatever. He went down into whatever this place is, the secret temple, to look at some paintings on the wall that would reveal like a treasure. And a huge explosion of flame went off in there caused by the evil wizard Korra, which disfigured his face.
Oh.
So now he wears, especially like the sensitive portrayal, everything's very sensitive. Where it's like, they're about to be killed by the green people. And Sinbad's like, hey, Grand Vizier, you're so hideous. Show everybody your face. It'll distract them.
Or I like they're in the Middle East and he's wearing a metal helmet on his face.
Yes. That's really why he's disfigured.
I was going to say, maybe he only had some light scarring, but after baking it in the sun for all these years.
I mean, you
kind of reminded me of the mask that Edward Norton wears in Kingdom of Heaven. I was like, is that the same mask? It looks very similar.
Same one. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Right? It's like, oh, look what I found.
Very environmental.
Very. Antonio, what do you got?
Oh, God. I got so many things. So, like, I think first and foremost, Carolyn Monroe, always the highlight. And I remembered that she was in it. I just forgot like how gorgeous she is. And it's an interesting thing because she was British, but I think every film I've ever seen in, she never uses a British accent. She always uses some caricature of whatever movie she's in.
Ill-defined.
Like, I don't even know what she really sounds like. But it's interesting. Good job on her for trying. I love the fact that like, yeah, she really is just kind of like a tag along. The fact that they sold her to Sinbad, you know, practically gave her to him. And they don't really have any like chemistry throughout the movie together until the end. You know, he shows he's a gentleman. He's like, oh, no, like I will serve you in this thing. You're not my slave. You're free now, blah, blah, blah. But then really, she's just there the other 45, 50 minutes of the movie. Whatever.
We got to throw some boobs in there. This can't be all just men.
It can't be like, yeah, the sausage fest.
I was watching this with my daughter, Lucy. And when Sinbad unceremoniously goes, oh, no, 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 you're not a slave. You're free. You're free. You can chart your own course and blah, blah, blah. You don't have to serve me. My daughter, Lucy's like, Sinbad's so progressive.
But then the very next line is, now fetch me a drink.
Yeah, right. My wife noticed that. My wife was like, what the?
I was like, what?
But then he turns back and says, please. He throws fleas in there.
If I was her, she's like, okay, I'm free. Then, like, take me back to shore. Like, why do I have to go
you
on this
jackass.
Treacherous journey with you?
Right. Exactly. Get me the hell out of here. The sausage fest. There was a moment where Sinbad's in town doing stuff. The rest of the sailors are hanging out on the ship. And there's, like, a stripper doing her thing. And Sinbad's, like, hit the bricks. And they're like, she's only done two of the veils, though. What is this, a monastery?
I paid for 10 and she only did 2.
Can I get a rebate or something? Very upsetting.
One of my favorite parts is where they go see the oracle.
Yes.
And the green goblin pops up. That was pretty slick. That looked really cool.
Right. It reminded me of Holy Grail, where they meet the crazy. way the guy looked kind of looked like the guy at the bridge who was asking them questions.
He kinda answer had that me look. These questions, 3.
It was. It was. Do you know who played the oracle?
Yeah, uncredited. I saw it. You go ahead and tell us.
I didn't notice this.
Neither did I.
Do you know, Aaron, who played the Oracle?
Here in Monty Python.
Sorry. In the Golden Voyage of Sinbad.
I do not. Lay it on me. Sir Laurence Olivier.
Robert Shaw.
Ooh.
Robert Shaw was friends with the director and happened to be in Spain at the time on vacation. Rolled in there. Now, it's not his real voice. They kind of dubbed it or did some kind of weird effect to it.
Pre-prime for the party, so.
that is true. So this is an all-star cast, as you can plainly see.
It really is.
Good stuff.
Apparently he did that role in 20 minutes, is what they said.
Oh, he's a pro.
they put the makeup on him. He said his lines like, all right, goodbye.
Right. Putting on the makeup and the weird horns and stuff probably took 10 times longer than him actually delivering the performance.
Especially since they dubbed him. So it just like.
And they zoom in on the crazy mouth that doesn't quite sync properly. Good grief. And I don't think it even really gave them, even, you know, accepting it's a riddle or whatever.
Right.
There was really no information gathered from the crazy oracle.
Right.
Some good times. And not to mention that evil Korra causes a cave-in, trapping them below with 2 of the idols that he needs.
Right.
Good thinking.
Some kind of like, and he's like using chemistry with it too. He's like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Yeah. How about this? Did you guys get like any Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade vibes from this?
Totally. Like, he lifted stuff from this.
100%. Like, I did not remember that watching as a kid. And then watching it this time, I'm like, oh my God, this is practically, you know, Sinbad Jones in The Last Crusade.
It absolutely is.
Which is also the title of an adult film I'm not fond of.
You know. Well, now I have to check my searches. No. He is very much the kind of the swashbuckler. Although not as deft as you might imagine as our friend Indiana, but he's like swinging and climbing. There was a scene where Haroon pulls off like his belt to tie to make the rope so they can escape from the cave, and his pants drop down. And all I heard was Sinbad go, "Tie up your camel." I didn't know if that was a euphemism or what.
In
was
my mind, I'm like, "What's happening?" That. Because they say that twice. I wrote that down.
It's
I think you're
the last
right.
line of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, in retrospect, what was happening is, I guess it's a common phrase in the Arab world is, you know, all trust to Allah. And I'm sure I'm f***ing this up. All trust to Allah, but tie up your camel is the thing. Basically, it's like God helps those who help themselves kind of thing.
Okay.
But the way
I have a student from Syria, I'm going to ask him that. I'm going to throw out a tie up your camel and see what he says.
Yeah, do that.
Out of
see how that goes for you.
Yeah, I hope you just didn't start a jihad, Kevin, by pronouncing that wrong.
Pretty much. No, and that became so. That was the laugh line in like as the credits roll, like it was an episode of Chips or something, where it's like trust in Allah, but tie up your camel.
Now you've got me thinking. So if his pants fall down and Sinbad says, tie up your camel because your dick fell out.
Right.
If we're using that mindset and that interpretation, So when he falls off of the mast at the end of the movie and is hanging by the rope, yeah. Are you saying that his dick fell out of his pants and they're saying, put your dick away, and that's credit. Right.
Could be.
Exactly. They're like, not again. Point. We've all seen it. Put it away. We've all been to those parties. Like,
it's like, Haru, we know you're small in stature, but well done, man. Good job.
You're slinging lumber like Paul Bunyan. We get it. You don't got to pull your pants down every 5 minutes. There was a moment, there was a line that I noticed. When the traitor at that city is trying to give away his son, sell his son, sell his concubine, and throw in 400 for the effort, mm-hmm. he says something like, she's not as lusciously fat as I prefer. But that's but at night, a pearl is the same as a cottonseed, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd say.
A pearl is the same as a cottonseed at night. That is true. Let me write that down.
Work that into conversation.
That's true as well, Aaron. Good grief.
That's my new pickup line when I go to the bar now. I'll be like, hey baby, you know.
When the lights go out, pearl's the same as a cottonseed. See how that gets you. Good grief. What else you guys got?
I have, when Doctor Who finally makes it to the Druid Temple in Arabia, didn't you expect him to be younger? So if it's the Fountain of Youth, why does it set you back to 40? Why wouldn't he be like suddenly like 20 or something, 15? I don't know.
I think it put him to where like he maybe felt like his best. You know, he's like, you know what? I liked this age. I was in my best shape.
No one was at their best shape at 40.
These days, we got all this human growth hormone and
oh, yeah.
all these different things.
This is 1972 40, which is like 65.
That's what I'm saying.
The Pall Malls and bourbon, right?
I mean, okay, Aaron, life expectancy back then was probably 40. So he actually went back to like 18, and that's just what 18 looks like mm-hmm. in Arabia circa
1974.
They establish that the evil wizard, whenever he uses his powers, it kind of ages him.
Right.
So by the end, he's got all three pieces of the medallion because it's supposed to grant you youth.
Of darkness.
And then, yeah, a weird.
And untold riches.
It's in a shield of darkness, which is a very bizarre. Can you be more specific? What the hell does that mean?
It's Harry Potter.
Invisibility or predator cloaking. I don't know.
Let's just say that then. Let's just say it grants you the power of invisibility. A cloak of darkness. What the hell? Anywho, he is staggering towards the pool because he has to throw the medallions in the pool, the fountain or whatever. And he stumbles like a foot away from it.
Right.
And then he like kind of pushes two of the medallions to the side for no reason. And then kind of is only reaching only for that little one. And you could tell he's like, really, he's doing some acting now. This is serious old man. I can barely, it's 2 inches away. I can't reach it. So it all works out in the end for Korra. So he's sprightly at 45 years old.
So like I said, I wish there were more creatures in the movie because I'm sorry, the masthead that comes to life, kind of weak sauce, you know? It's
oh, I like that. I thought that was really cool.
I think I'm just so spoiled on all the other creatures, you know, and it gets, you know, knocked off the side of the boat and sinks to the bottom.
I know, just kind of tilts over. Like John Philip Law. Just push him over.
That's a dual
role. He played that part, too.
Yes.
I mean, now that you think about it, two of the big monsters just die from getting pushed over.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and here's the curse of 4K. So I watched this in 4K. You see every green screen, there's like a little like shimmer or something. So you could see, that's the curse of all the Harryhausen movies now. I watch Mysterious Island and it hits you like, okay, well, here's obviously some, I mean, you knew.
When they re-released the Star Wars, that was the same problem too. The original 100%. Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's this shit? I'm paying top dollar for this now.
just to pull the curtain to reveal, you know, that no, there wasn't a giant griffin crawling around in real life.
Boo.
Very upsetting.
The worst one, Aaron, is when he does blow up the entrance to the temple that has the big face on it. You see like him and his little sidekick, Corin's little sidekick. It's a very wide shot and they're almost entirely green because yes. The backdrop is so well lit. I was like, ooh, that's bad. Yeah, because I watched this in 4K too. It's like, well, it looked great back then.
You need to find an old scratch version on your Betamax and put it on. It'll be
on
beautiful.
A CRT, right?
Absolutely. CRT.
It's got like 20 minutes of porn like spliced in the middle of it for some reason.
So the way it was meant to be watched.
Right.
I would tune in for that, actually. No, they showed like they pull up on the beach and there's the big mountain range. And then there's like weird little faces on the mountain that are totally different color. Yeah. Than the rock is supposed to be. We're like, what the is that? Why is that rock purple? And that
and
one
because
yellow?
They're superimposed, yes. There's like a slight jitter to them where they're like kind of moving. Yeah. But I appreciate that. Because here's the thing, guys. I mean, we're so spoiled these days with special effects or CGI or just better practical effects that when you go back and watch this old stuff, yeah, it's so easy to point out, you know, the errors or the little glitches in the weird projection. But at the same time, when you saw this in the theater back then, you were literally like in another world. Like these movies did do that for you. And that's why you were talking like 40 years of Harryhausen special effects that never really progressed. It's because they didn't have to. Yeah, it was unnecessary. You were still bringing something that didn't exist to the world. And it was awesome. I still think my favorite is the skeletons and Jason. That was the best.
It was great.
Hands down the best. But
I mean, this is its own genre, really. So you enjoy all the stop motion animation. Now, when they pulled some of this crap in the original Game of Thrones with the dragon, you were like, oh, no.
Didn't you stop anime?
Bazillion. Oh, some of the early dragon pictures, she's riding the dragon. It literally looked like you had a Barbie doll. And a plastic dragon. Woo! No, it was terrible. They fix that in later episodes, but at first you're like, what the? You're spending hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
You got to do better.
And then like Dragon Slayer from 82 nailed it with its stop motion and its puppetry. And then like the other thing too is like Phil Tippett, who did the RoboCop and...
Right.
Yeah, like those, I mean, you can obviously tell they're stop motion, but it was the same technology that Harryhausen was using, and they were using that all the way. They almost used that for Jurassic Park. Like, that was almost Jurassic Park until they, like, you know what, let's try the CGI shit instead, and, you know, never looked back.
Well, and I think, you know, that stop motion works when it is kind of, you know, the robots on RoboCop. When it's the M209, you can watch it now. And it still looks pretty good. It's harder when it's like an organic living creature to show that. So, I mean, honestly, Jurassic Park, they had to make that software. They had to make the technology on the fly, frankly, to get that computer-generated dinosaurs to appear. If it was just the same old Dynamision or whatever the Harryhausen name for it was, it wouldn't have been the same.
It was Dynamation at first, and then they changed it to Dinorama.
That sounds like a band, like Dramarama, Dinorama.
Bananarama.
I mean, everything has its place.
It does.
Like, I just saw The Nun 2 and saw the worst CGI with a room full of CGI roaches. I was like,
more
really?
Dinorama, I think, is what you're saying.
It was ridiculous. It was so shitty. Of all the weird CGI, that was the worst.
I liked, getting back to the story, if you don't mind. I liked how Sinbad goes on this adventure, loses 90% of his crew.
In every movie.
Like, just massacred. And ends up with nothing.
Yeah.
He ends up with the slave girl that he had at the beginning of the adventure.
He's like independently wealthy and he's bored and he just goes on these adventures. He's not delivering anything. He's not a pirate. He's just out. Cruise, he and his homies.
Are you saying he's like the Richard Branson of Arabia?
Yes.
Richard Branson of Arabia, 100%.
I like that.
It's like, I guess at the beginning of the movie, he has a bone to pick with Korra because Korra tries to kill him on the beach. Therefore, that establishes Korra as the villain. So that later when he meets the Vizier, he, who is also an enemy of Korra, he's kind of, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So now I'm going to sacrifice my entire crew to get you a crown.
Right. Yeah.
Great. And then what? How are you selling anywhere without it? You and that lady, she's going to be climbing up there, rigging the sails. Is that it?
She's going to have to, right? I mean, they lost. They still have Rashid. Rashid, like, opened the door at the end, his arms in a sling. Yay! Yay! Like, he's still around.
But and they still got Eric Estrada. They still got him.
Still got Eric Estrada, which is shocking. It's shocking he's still kicking because he was the pits. He was the worst.
I would have used him as like Griffin bait or some shit.
Absolutely. And then we have to talk about, okay, so they try to sacrifice Caroline Monroe to the creature that the green people worship, who's a giant centaur cyclops.
They got like 12 things they're worshiping, all that Kali, seem to be from different regional religions.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. So they throw her ass down there. Sinbad and the gang also follow her down into the creature's lair. And then suddenly a griffin just appears out of nowhere. No preamble. Like, oh shit, where'd this thing come from?
It's been living down here all this time. I could have had a pet.
Right. <you know? laughs> Absolutely. And it's established, well, the Cyclops thing is evil and the griffin is good. Why? Just because they're fighting? They're fucking animals.
I just wanted to know who gave the Cyclops the necklace. Did he macrame that himself? Did Mrs. Cyclops make that?
Yes.
What's happening? Where is he buying his jewelry?
I think we have to take it deeper. I think that the Griffin and the Cyclops Centaur have like some kind of like domestic situation and they're just having a dispute, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
So it's like Three's Company.
Until Topmaker interfered.
Right. Callie, the Griffin, and the Centaur all have like a weird Mr. Roper situation where it's like, okay, someone pretend to be gay now. And
that's exactly what it is. I think we can all agree that's the subtext.
I want to see that sitcom.
Situation. I was waiting for the Centaur to turn towards the camera and smile.
That's like a double check. Oh, beautiful.
Sweet Jesus. And Tom Baker gets all the medallions and just goes off. And Sinbad's like, cool, deuces, I guess. I'm going to follow Caroline Monroe. I mean, I guess you want to save her. Be a good guy. Don't let her get eaten by the creature, presumably. But she's like, you gave up all... I'm doing the accent now. You gave up all your riches. And he's like, I regret nothing. How did your crew feel about that choice, by the way?
It's like, do you hear this motherfucker right now? You said
mutiny.
Mutiny.
Mutiny! I mean, Kali alone killed about 5 of them, right? I love the idea of you get into a sword fight with a thing made of stone. Even if you get a direct hit, what is that gonna fucking do?
Exactly.
Right.
I would have tried to get out of the way because it doesn't seem very flexible.
Right.
You might want a boogie.
Right. I wanted to see lightsabers instead of the swords at the end of that thing. There's like a real kind of cool thing where like the swords just emerge out of nowhere in Kali's hand.
Yes.
And my first thought was like,
absolutely. Why not?
Why not?
At this stage of the game, why not? Sinbad fights Kali pretty much single-handedly while the crew watches on. And then
we didn't choose this. Lead leader.
Well, they were nice enough to have a few randos run in. I'll help Sinbad just to get killed instantly and fall down. They drag their body off. Don't worry about dragging the body off. Okay, drag Sinbad off. Let's get the hell out of here.
There was literally only 6 crew members and 5 of them were killed here, except everyone you recognize is still there at the end. So I don't know who the rest of these rando crew members are.
It's like a fake Shemp situation. They just have people in there just to kind of be bodies to kill. Well, how about this? How about when the cave-in starts happening, he tells everyone to go back, but then he takes Carolyn Monroe up to the top as if the two of them are going to escape. But all the rest of the crew have to stay down by the pit to get crushed to death. I was like, fucking Sinbad again, man.
Thanks, Sinbad. Where's our riches? It should have been like the end of Goonies, where they all turn on Mikey for a few minutes there. Where's the gold, Mikey? It's like, come on. Give me a chance.
Well, that's what the crew, I mean, if he's like a pirate, you're supposed to divide all this stuff up. He's like, you can have it. Everybody's like,
what the?
My three of my brothers just died fighting the stone monster. Right. And I'm going to get nothing?
Nothing.
Nothing.
You at least get Caroline Monroe. What do we get? Rasheed gets a broken arm for his trouble. So there you go.
I get a griffin pelt. It's what I get.
Pretty much. Any last thoughts or feelings, guys?
I just have to comment again that she is just sweaty and oiled the whole time. Tom Baker's been fighting monsters for 20 minutes as dry as a stone. You look at her, it's like they've covered her in Wesson oil.
Well,
Wesson.
are you saying that you want to see Tom Baker glistening and covered in Wesson oil as well?
Well, quite frankly, he was a little sweaty too, but maybe not so much. But his teeth were so up, it was fabulous.
Oh yeah, he definitely had the British teeth for sure. I thought it was interesting, and I didn't know this, but apparently, you know, because Harryhausen gets, like, you know, co-story writing credits and stuff like that and all these things, what I found out as I dug into a little bit more just about Harryhausen is these movies, 90% of them did not even have a story when they started. Harryhausen would just make the models and sketch the creatures, and then he would hand a stack of papers to the studio and be like, here, make something with this.
Right.
So all these films really were written based around whatever characters he drew or sculpted or whatever. Like, the creatures came first and then the stories were built after. So I think that's why we don't get a whole lot of structure in some of these films.
Right.
And we really don't care because we want to see the monsters. But yeah, like, the monsters that were in Eye of the Tiger were mostly monsters that he had created for this, but
right.
There was no room for any more monsters. So it's an interesting way of, like, knowing how these movies actually came together. Cause for the longest time, I'm like, God, these guys just really fucking love Sinbad. Right. And it's like, oh no, they just need something for these monsters to be in.
Right.
Well, it's kind of like Ed Wood, you know, he get all that stock footage.
Right. You got to use
and
it.
And then work weaves a story around it.
Absolutely. They don't trouble themselves with why. It is just kind of a set piece. And like you said, the troglodyte from Eye of the Tiger was originally going to fight the centaur in this movie. So they've just said, well, we got the troglodyte. Let's just move it over to that one. So
wow.
That's how they do it. That's how they do it. Not that I'm complaining, but well, I guess I am complaining a little bit. So good times. Shall we go behind the scenes?
Lay it on me.
We talked about this briefly. Robert Shaw was a friend of producer Charles H. Schneer, who persuaded him to play the Oracle of All Knowledge in the film, who doesn't really give them a whole lot of knowledge, honestly.
Yeah, Shaw, it's gobbledygook.
Shaw agreed as a favor, but requested that he not get any credit for the role, as Shaw was extremely popular at the time and felt that the genre was beneath him, rightfully
Ooh,
so.
Nice.
His face was heavily swathed in makeup and his voice electronically altered by a sound engineer. Shaw was paid £5,000 for just 20 minutes of work.
Right on.
Not too bad. Let's see. When Sinbad and the others land on Lemuria, a cliff along the left side of the beach is covered with carvings. According to an interview given by Ray Harryhausen, the cliff does not exist. The scene was shot in a popular beach in Spain, and the cliff was a matte painting added to hide all the spectators. Good times.
I like it.
This film helped Tom Baker get the role of the fourth Doctor in Doctor Who.
Wow.
Yeah, producer Barry Letts went to see it shortly after Baker was recommended for the role. And I've always said, growing up, I didn't know there were multiple Doctors. Tom Baker was my Doctor of my childhood.
Right.
So there you go. I don't know if that's just an American thing. Like, because what was Doctor Who on? Like PBS?
Yeah, PBS. Like
States?
My whole life on PBS.
Yeah. When I lived in the Bay Area, Sunday night, it was after 9 o'clock, it was like 2 hours of Doctor Who.
That's a lot of Doctor Who. Let's see. Christopher Lee was the front runner for the role of Korra, the evil wizard in the film.
Oh.
So that would have been an interesting choice. Let's see. Ray Harryhausen devised a Valley of the Vipers sequence for the film featuring real snakes and a giant stop animated
That's snake. Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
The producer was afraid of snakes, however, and argued that the scene would upset pregnant women. So the concept went unused.
What the hell? Is that like the Elephant Man? The pregnant mother was frightened by an elephant, and that's what caused this.
I can't take it. Let's see. As done in Ben-Hur in 1959, they reused part of his score from Quo Vadis. In this film, they reused part of the score from Ben-Hur for this movie. So there you go. Good times.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that's about it. Shall we talk about the rating?
Lay it on me.
The Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Currently, 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. You know what the audience gave it?
What? 82.
64.
Yeah.
That's upsetting.
I think a lot of it, too, is because when you're looking at those critic scores, a lot of those are contemporary of the time when it came out. And then the audience scores are more contemporary with us. So people are like, it's fine, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, because you'll see stuff that was like rated really poorly by critics in like the 60s or 70s. And then people are giving it like 80s, 90s in the modern times.
And we've talked to people before. It's like we go on and on. Oh, Jaws is a classic. You talk to like young modern audiences and they don't like it. I think it's cheesy.
I think we were told young people, referring not to us, think that's kind of a joke. I was like, what?
I mean,
I know the monster looks like crap, but the talk about the Indianapolis, the story overall, the acting, it's amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where I guess you just had to be there for the Golden Voyage. Who's to say? Okay, top critics. Variety staff, which I always love. God. No one will put their name on it.
This smells contemporary whenever I hear variety staff.
An Arabian Nightish saga told with some briskness and opulence for the childish eye, yet ultimately falling short of implied promise as an adventure spree.
Briskness and opulence. What kind of nonsense review is this?
It is a nonsense review. Ian Nathan of Empire Magazine says, swords and silly special effects in this enjoyable adventure. So that's a positive
review. Empire Magazine. Do I get that at the supermarket?
Yes, it's a leaflet. It's Empire Magazine. How dare you? How dare you? What is your rating, Aaron?
My rating is based on pure nostalgia. During summertime, they would have kiddie matinees where parents could drop their kids off for 4 freaking hours with the JCs and just eat, run around like maniacs, screaming and watching like old cartoons and movies. I'm going to give this 4 collies trying to kick your motherfucking ass out of 5.
Antonio, what do you think?
Okay, if we're going to go by the Kali scale, I give it 3.5. I love all the Sinbad movies. This is not my Sinbad movie 100%, but it's still great. I think if we had a little bit more Carolyn Monroe doing actual stuff in the movie, maybe some more romance, maybe some, belly dancing, that would give it that extra 0.5, but it's a good movie. I like it. 3.5 Callies.
No one's going to tell her to tie up her camel.
I hope not.
Don't make me tie up my camel. You know what? It's funny because it's kind of like what you were saying, Aaron. I have two different ratings. Yeah. There's the nostalgia, it warms my heart kind of feeling, which might even be like an 8.5 on the Richter scale. But if I have to judge it coldly, acknowledging some of the issues, I'm also going to give it, 3.5 Dances of the Seven Veils, but only 2 of the veils.
Only 2 of the veils.
What is this, a monastery? I think the good thing about it is it's fun for the whole family. If they sit through it, that's the concern. Is it a little too slow going with only homunculus floating by for the first 45 minutes?
I need a pet homunculus. I need that.
Yeah, my kid, I started having him watch Seventh Voyage and Mysterious Island and Jason the Argonauts early, like at age 5 or 6. And he loves
not,
them.
Not Saw.
No, not yet. In due time. But yeah, I've never put this one on for him because I just remembered how I was kind of bored by it as a kid because I liked the other one so much more. I'd say of all the Sinbad movies, this probably is the one that was more for the older audiences because it was less fantastical.
Less fantastic.
This is the more mature one.
I think so. I mean, Sinbad has an accent, you know?
Very ill-defined origin, but yeah.
We're acting here. This is acting, performing now.
They all try to do something. I'll say that. They all tried to throw a little something special on their accent. So.
Well, it's like, yeah, they show up on day one of shooting and everyone's like prepared just to act. And then John Philip Law comes out with his accent. Like, oh, I guess we're doing accents. Okay. This is going to be my accent, you know.
Right, is that Count from Sesame Street? Absolutely.
One, Kali.
Exactly. It's good for the whole family, but some younger viewers who were raised on computer graphics, you know, CGI, might turn their nose up, especially if you watch it on a 4K screen.
Right. But unless there's a car chase within 5 minutes, the kids start wandering off.
They start wandering off. Absolutely. Very upsetting. So thank you very much. Go to our pages on Twitter/X. We still kind of call it Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on TikTok, Instagram, Threads. The list goes on and on. You can also email us at the podcast that wouldn't die at
Gmail.
We're on YouTube, so you may be watching this, seeing our beautiful smiling faces, or leering, growling. you can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere the finer podcasts are available. Aaron, what is your social media situation?
I'm on the Threads. I'm on the Insta. I'm the Cult of Aaron. Join the cult. I am also Don't Feed the Pigeon. Professionally, I'm on Artsy and First Dibs, Aaron Doherty. Buy some Polaroid art, please.
Beautiful. Antonia, where can people find you?
Oh, hey, the same places where they find you guys on X, Twitter, whatever we call it. Threads, Facebook, Instagram. But if you want to find all those, just go to my website, thecultworthy.com, for podcast episodes, YouTube episodes, blogs, links to your guys' show. I have all my partners in there. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a blast. Finally able to return the favor from your just magnificent guest performances on my show that are a lot of laughs and a lot of editing.
Sweet. And we'll include all your links on our show notes. So good times had by all. Do yourself a favor and check it out. Good times. As we like to do, a little viewer, watcher, comments, mail. So why don't we do that right now? Let's see. Talking about Time Bandit. One of our episodes from a few weeks ago. The Chris and Christine show say, barely remember that movie, but it was weird.
Barely remember that.
It's true, though. It's true. Let's see. Marv from Pods Like Us says, I bloody love this film and have done since I first saw it in the 80s. You can tell it's written by Terry Gilliam and Michael Palin because it has a very Python-esque feel to it. While showcasing Palin's love for history and the film looking hilariously at the absurd realism of the times, Connery being in the film is icing on the cake that already fills you up. Look at that.
He's iconic. You throw a new wig on it, he's a whole new character. Boom.
Or don't. I mean, or Connery, don't. You could throw a wig on, no wig, whatever you need to. He is a chameleon. He could be whatever you need to be. So good times had by. I just watched a Connery movie from the mid-80s called The Name of the Rose.
Love
oh
that
my
movie.
God, love Name of the Rose.
With a young Christian Slater.
And his butt.
That is absolutely true.
Still as peculiar as ever.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Sausage Fest, I mean, that is 2+ hours of just old men in little robes Yeah, good times.
And Ron Perlman has never been sexier.
Oh my God. Speaking of ill-defined accents. Good times had by all.
I was going to say, someone on TikTok wrote about A Knock at the Cabin. And but now, of course, I can't find them. But whoever they were, they agreed with me about Batista being an acting wizard who needs more serious roles, because he was freaking amazing in Knock at the Cabin.
That was like the best part of the movie was his performance.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Absolutely.
That was it. That's the only reason I gave it the rating, because, I mean, that was a hidden gem for sure.
No question. No question at all. Next week. Aaron, what are we doing next week? We didn't even discuss it. What do you want to do? Gonna throw on you? If you don't have something, I got something.
All right, what you got?
We're going to do the remake, which is what I like to do. The House on Haunted Hill. With Jeffrey Rush, Famke Janssen, Taye Diggs. It's an all-star cast.
God. Is it?
Is it? That's what I'm saying.
We did the remake of 13 Ghosts.
Oh, not my that God. What trash.
No. Hey.
Come on. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. No, they're fun. They're fun. They're not high art. They're not like the Golden Voyage of Sinbad. You know?
I just watched the horrible remake with Liam Neeson and Lily, whatever the f*** her name is, remake of Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yes. The Haunting. Oh, yeah. And Owen Wilson.
Catherine Zeta. It's good stuff.
An all-star cast.
Now you're talking. If you are inspired to watch the remake of The House on Haunted Hill, you will have to pay for it. Or go to the library. Maybe it's on Hoopla or one of those things. Who's to say? Maybe your grandmother has a copy. Check it out. Okay.
Go otherwise, to Kevin's neighbor's house. Apparently they're really cool with you just showing up.
Help yourself. Open the window. Push your way in. It's on Amazon Prime for $3.99. Uh-oh. Aaron's giving me the stink eye. Very sad.
Bastard.
So check that out. Send any favorite scenes, favorite quotes, comments, and questions, and maybe we'll talk about it on the show. So thank you very much, and be well.
Don't take the fentanyl.